The future of global trade pivots around Sicily today. From Marketplace in New York, I'm David Brancaccio. Let's go right to the province of Messina in Sicily, where Donald Trump is preparing for his first meeting of the seven leading advanced economies, the Group of Seven. The BBC's James Reynolds is at the summit in the town of Taormina. James, thanks for linking up here.
Good morning, David. It's a pleasure to be speaking to you.
So trade policy is going to be on this G7 agenda, right?
Yes, that's one of the major issues, and already there's a controversy. There are reports in the German media suggesting that Donald Trump spoke reasonably angrily about Germany selling too many cars to the United States and suggesting that he wanted to change that. The president of the European Commission, Jean-Claude Juncker, has played down those reports, but I think it does give an indication of some of the kind of tensions that we'll see within the G7.
So we have trade issues. We also have a planet-wide issue, climate change. President Trump hasn't said whether or not he will stick to the Paris Climate Agreement. That is going to be on this agenda as well.
It is, and I think that's a vital cause for the other leaders. During the 2016 presidential election campaign, President Trump called climate change a hoax and suggested that he would withdraw the United States from that Paris Climate Change Agreement. Since then, he's now said that that policy is under review. And I think that's something that the leaders will press him on. They'll say, what is the U.S. position? Are you in or are you out? It may be that at a two-day summit, they don't make a final decision and they try to sidestep that in their final communique.
Always good to talk to the BBC's James Reynolds. He's in the Sicilian province of Messina, site of the G7 meeting today. Mr. Reynolds, thank you.
It's a pleasure.
Much ado about something in Messina. Let's do the numbers. The FTSE in London is up 0.2%. Dow, S&P, and NASDAQ futures are down this morning, with the Dow future down 19 points, about 0.1%. George Akerlof got a Nobel Prize for studying the economics of lemons, lemons as in cars with hidden flaws, but today a story about the market for lemons as in lemons. The U.S. had banned the import of fresh lemons from Argentina for 16 years, citing the risk of plant disease, but last month, ahead of a meeting with Argentina's president, the U.S. president said this.
And I'll tell him about North Korea and he'll tell me about lemons.
Soon after, the USDA announced it would lift the ban on lemons, effective today. Marketplace's Adrian Hill reports.
Here come the Argentine lemons. The USDA estimates the new supply will push down the price of lemons a couple pennies. U.S. consumers could save $22.4 million on their collective lemon purchases. But for U.S. citrus farmers,
we get nailed. We get nailed.
Joel Nelson is president of California Citrus Mutual, a trade group. The USDA estimates lifting the ban will cost domestic lemon growers as much as $19.9 million. For economists, the calculation is simple. John Began is a professor at NC State University.
You aggregate gains to consumers and losses to producers.
In this case, the net gain to the U.S. of Argentine lemons is about $2.5 million. But, says Nelson from the Citrus Group,
It'll affect the ability of some producers to stay in business. It just will.
The math isn't so straightforward. I'm Adrian Hill for Marketplace.
It's getting harder for middle-class families to afford a place to live in the U.S. A new report from the real estate brokerage Redfin shows that in the 30 biggest metro areas, the number of home listings in the range that middle-class families can afford has dropped by 32% in the last 5 years. This hurts a lot of people, especially people of color. Marketplace's Adam Allington has more.
Samantha Doyle said she'd been looking for a house for so long in Washington, D.C. that she'd almost given up.
So the fact that I could afford this home says a lot, because most homes like this I wouldn't be able to afford.
At $313,000, Doyle says she was lucky to find a three-bedroom in Anacostia, a predominantly African-American neighborhood in the eastern part of the city that's slowly gentrifying. Across the rest of the metro region, median sales prices just hit a 10-year high of $419,000.
That's actually kind of what brought me to Anacostia, is that there's nowhere else to go. On the other side of the river is the last frontier in terms of D.C.,
For minority homebuyers, that last frontier is shrinking across the country. According to Redfin, just 18% of new home listings were affordable for median-income Hispanic families, compared to 14% for African Americans and 30% for white households, all significant drops from where they stood just 5 years ago.
I think it's it's important to look at this from a fairness perspective.
Alondra Cano sits on the Minneapolis City Council. As housing costs rise faster than wages, she says minorities are being priced out of their own neighborhoods, often after decades of investment.
They have made those commercial corridors thrive again, even when the city wasn't interested in investing in those corridors.
In addition to the affordability gap, mortgages are also harder to get. Elena McCargo is the co-director of the Housing Policy Finance Center at the Urban Institute.
Lenders are taking a lot less risk, less than half the credit risk they were taking in 2001. And we consider 2001 a period of normal lending standards.
So the bar is higher for everyone, but for minorities, who McCargo says often have fewer assets and lower credit scores, getting a mortgage loan has become even harder.
Right now, loans that are being made in the United States are the most pristine quality loans that we've seen ever.
According to the center's statistics, in 2001, the national mortgage default rate stood at 12%. It jumped up during the recession, but now sits at just 5%. I'm Adam Allington for Marketplace.
And the Obama-era official who oversaw the Department of Education's massive student loan program has abruptly quit. James Runcie has left a scathing resignation memo obtained by the New York Times in which he claims that Education Secretary Betsy DeVos plans to move the whole student loan program from the Education Department over to the Treasury Department. The federal government tends to $1 trillion in student loan debt. Shrinking the Department of Education has been a GOP plank since the Reagan era. Our senior producer is Nicole Childers. Our digital producer is Janet Wynn. Stephanie Hughes produces Marketplace Tech. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.